We have a full agenda today with a number of bills that we will be hearing, and we want to get started right away. And to conclude the hearing today, we will be taking up the omnibus policy bill, and we'll work through that process as we move forward. But we'll start out today with Senate File 51, Senator Koch.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members.
Welcome to the committee.
Senate File 51 before you is a female veterans license plate designation. And, Mr. Chair, I believe we have an amendment. What we're working on right now, we have two amendments, Mr. Chair. But if you'd like, we could go into and do a brief explanation of the bill.
Why don't we pass out the First Amendment, the A2 Amendment, and as they're doing that, why don't you go ahead and explain the bill?
I'll let my testifiers.
Hello, my name is Trista Mattis-Castillo. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having us here today.
Welcome to the committee.
I am the chair of the Women Veterans Initiative Working Group for the state of Minnesota, as well as a woman veteran. And the concept of the plate is to educate the community and to honor the service of our women veterans. We have 23,000 women veterans in Minnesota, and we have found that many of them don't even identify themselves as veterans for lots of reasons, but there's been a common understanding that veteran is defined by someone who's been in combat, which we know with the combat exclusion laws, women aren't technically in combat, although we know that they are. And so this plate would allow women to, first of all, recognize themselves as veterans, but also for society to recognize us as veterans as well and honor our service. Being the spouse of a veteran, my husband is also a veteran, it's very common that when you see veteran plates, instantly it's assumed that they belong to a man. And so this would, and though many of them do, there are a few of us, like myself and Senator Koch, who are women veterans, and that we should be recognized for that as well.
I think we have a quorum now, don't we? Okay. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Koch, welcome.
Thank you.
Here we've been kind of hanging out with each other for the last year and a half, and I apologize. I don't even remember what branch were you in and our testifier, if you would.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chair and Senator Perry, I was the United States Air Force. I was a Russian linguist stationed at the National Security Agency.
Mr. Chair, Senator Perry, I actually have a different career path. I served on active duty for 16 years and served in the Navy, the Marines, and the Army. Wow. So together we've got them all covered.
All branches are excellent, Mr. Chair, Senator Perry.
Mr. Chairman, now I know how she gets her order-giving techniques.
She was well-trained. That military background has served her well. Senator DeCry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have one question kind of bouncing off of what Senator Perry was suggesting. First of all, I want to thank you both for your service. And now that you have them all covered, which one is better?
Oh, Mr. Chair and Senator DeCry, Air Force.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perry.
On behalf of the Army, I'd like to move the A2 Amendment.
It starts with an A, Senator Perry? Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly. Senator Perry moves the A2 Delete Everything Amendment. Need discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, if I could explain, the A2 Amendment is aimed at the fiscal note that was attached to this plate. There originally was, I think, some miscommunication on the designation and how many plates that would apply to, and that was not our intention was not that it would apply to several plates, but to one specific female veterans plate. And so, as I understand it, the fiscal note should now all be gone except for, I think, $500, which the Veterans Department has agreed to absorb the $500 fiscal note. So we don't like fiscal notes, and we've fixed the bill to get rid of that fiscal note. or to make clear, it was never intended to have a fiscal note. We just had to clarify some language. There was some assumptions that were incorrect.
Thank you for that clarification, Senator Kolk.
Mr. Chair, I did misspeak. The Department of Public Safety will be absorbing the additional $500 cost.
Okay. I see Ms. McCormick is here, but she just stepped out of the hearing room. Is everybody on the committee comfortable with that explanation and the fiscal note that's attached to this? I think it's pretty clear to all of us. And so, Senator Kolk, we will lay this bill over for inclusion in our omnibus policy bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your service, both you and your testifier, and appreciate your efforts.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Senator Benson here. See Senator Benson quite yet. Senator Perry, why don't we take your back in? If you'll quit tweeting. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. I come before you today with Senate file number 366. It's pretty simple adjustment as I look at it. It was one of those adjustments I tried to make last year as a freshman and fell victim to the freshman hazing last year of it not passing on the floor when I tried to amend it. Your predecessor seemed to be somewhat insistent that I find lobbyists to come forward to try to get this through, and I didn't feel that that was necessary. So what this is adding two words to bill, sweet corn. It means a lot to the folks in southern Minnesota and should for the state. We have over 129,000 acres of sweet corn, that luscious stuff that we all gather, and whether we do it on the grill or we boil it in water, we all like to chew on that nice corn cob and have it pop in our mouth and, you know, have the sugar and spice sweet corn that's so good. What this does is...
Senator Perry, for a guy that hasn't had lunch yet, do you mind getting on with your testimony, please?
Okay. Well, I was just trying to set the stage here.
You said it well.
Thank you. So I guess what we'd like to do is what this bill does is it allows the producers of sweet corn, when they move that corn from the field to the processing plant, same 10% overage in weight as we do when we allow carrots, sugar beets, potatoes from the field. They have a minimum amount of time to move the product, as when it ripens, it's ready to go. And you'll notice that when you travel through southern Minnesota, which is the largest area of producing sweet corn in the state, which is well around an $80 million a year project. But you'll see that when they're taking the sweet corn out when it's raining and it's muddy and they're moving it quickly. And so I would ask for support in Senate File 366. But I do have someone here. Matter of fact, I understand there's a couple of people that would like to testify if we could do that, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely, Senator Perry. Mr. Clavin, welcome to the committee.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bruce Clavin. I work for all three sugar companies and the potato growers, which you'll see on lines 1.10. I'm here just strictly to maybe explain quickly to head off potential questions that would probably happen on this bill. What are the permits, and why just those three traditionally have been included in the statute? In an effort to try to help the Senator explain this to the members, I caught him just before committee on this. Quickly, there are two ways to get overweight tickets in the state, and I know some of the experts with the MnDOT are here. I'm going to explain it to you the way I explain it to the growers every fall. There are two ways to get it. First, you can get an overweight ticket on the drive from the field to the elevator, okay, if you're driving 5 miles or something. The State Patrol can pull you over and get the portable scales out. They call them the portables. If a semi is legal at 80,000 and you're 81,000 on the highway on the way to the elevator, you can get an overweight ticket for 1,000 pounds. So that's the first way you can get a ticket. The second way is if you get all the way to the elevator and you're 81, you made it to the elevator. But the State Patrol can go into the elevator within 14 days of delivery and start rifling through the tickets and look for the overweights. They can send you a fine in the mail, but only if it's 10% or greater. So if you're 81 and you make it to the elevator, no ticket. If you're 89 on a semi, the ticket can come in the mail. What this provision does is allows the growers to buy basically insurance from the field to the elevator, so that if you get pulled over with the portables and you're less than 10%, you won't get an overweight fine for 81. That's how it works in a nutshell. Why these three crops here have been listed traditionally, and this has been in place for many years, is because they're root crops. They grow in the ground, and when you bring them up, there's mud on them or dirt. And there can be a lot of mud or there can be a little bit of mud. I even brought some color photos from my file if anybody's interested in the beet harvest operation. It shows how there's mud on them. And we harvest this stuff 24 hours a day. So there's more dirt that sticks on at 4 a.m. than 4 p.m. after the sun's been on the field. So you can load the truck the same way visually as you're doing it on the go and be off by the weight completely unintentionally. And so that's the Reader's Digest version on why we've had it. Neutral on the sweet corn if you want to add it, but I wanted to explain to members how this works and why we use it.
Any questions from the committee to this point?
I think, Mr. Chairman, there's someone from the County Association or the County Engineer Associations that would like to testify too.
We have a couple of people on our list. We would ask them to come to the table if they would like to testify on this bill. Mr. Vanosik, Mr. Turgeon, or Mr. Rudin? We start with Mr. Rudin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs. And just very briefly, although we certainly recognize the economic benefit that trucks provide to the state, one fully loaded legal weight truck does the damage of approximately 1,600 passenger vehicles to pavements, and heavier trucks do shorten the life of pavements and bridges. And also just wanted to point out that all unprocessed agricultural products, including sweet corn, are eligible for a special farm product permit that already exists in law in 169.865. The permit allows 90,000 pounds for a truck with six axles or 97,000 pounds for a truck with seven axles. The additional axle means that less weight is carried on each axle, thereby reducing the damage to pavements. And Mr. Chair, these heavier trucks are typically not as much of a problem on state highways because our state trunk highways are built to a higher standard generally, but it can be a problem for the local roadway system.
Okay, Mr. Rudin, is that permit an annual permit then, or a seasonal permit for the entire season, or what is the structure of that permit? Is it per load?
No, Mr. Chair, it's not per load. It's an annual permit.
It's an annual. Senator DeCray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rudin, I'm trying to clarify, it's an annual permit, but is this typically during the harvest season that this is utilized, or what about during spring thaw? What about road restrictions? Can this still be utilized at that point?
Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair, Senator DeCray, they still have to comply with seasonal load restrictions. The permit was designed mostly with the thought of harvest in mind, which is not typically done in the spring.
Right. Okay. Senator Perry, just a quick question. Is typically the 80,000 pounds a problem for sweet corn being trucked from the field to the first processor? What makes up the difference, or what causes them to be overweight?
Mr. Chairman, what I've been told, and again, not knowing the time period, I had Mr. Ingvaldson, who said he would come, but my understanding is when they're moving nonstop at night, they're loading these trucks, and visually they think they're where they should be, and as we all know, the smaller the load, the more trips, the more expense hence the cost goes up and is just passed down to the consumers. And with the size trucks, these are, as I understand it, some of them are utilized for snow removal and that, so the weight is where it's at, and this just gives them that same opportunity. So without, it's about all I can add to that.
Thank you, Senator Perry. Mr. Vanosik?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Vanosik, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Inter-County Association, which is a organization of 13 counties, five of which are in the metropolitan area, and eight in greater Minnesota.
Thanks.
Our organization has had a longstanding position regarding weight restrictions in that the ability to make decisions regarding seasonal road restrictions ought to be with the individual road authorities. We feel we should be relying on our professionals, the county engineers, to make a determination whether a permit should be given based on long-term experience and what effect an oversized load might have on an individual a roadway. Our engineers do give out permits, and actually, you know, the way we would maybe make a suggestion to you is that rather than kind of going with a piecemeal approach, which individual initiatives come to you for exemptions, and those of you who've been around know that over the years there's always a commodity group or other organization that is seeking a particular exemption for their own industry, that maybe the time has come where we should be all sitting down together and developing a longer-term, more comprehensive policy as to how to deal with these permitting exemptions. And I do know that criticism that's been leveled in the past is that if you do have to take a load through more than one road jurisdiction, you know, that you currently have to go to each one of those jurisdictions to get a permit. And maybe one approach would be to have a sort of a one-stop place where you can go to get that permit for the entire route. So I also believe that you have received a letter from the State County Engineers Association expressing their concerns, as well as the Association of Minnesota Counties. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Perry.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I understand all of that, and since this has come about, I've had people contact me with their concerns, concerns about going from the field to point A to point B to point C and so on down. You know, and I look at that, and sitting on the city council, as I did in Waseca, though I wasn't the mayor, just a council member, I said that for my friend Senator Howell. We had great concerns because we have bird's eye. And I don't know if you heard the news just recently, through consolidation, bird's eye in Waseca will even grow larger and will pick up more of the product production and enhancement of more employees in that. And we always had concerns about the trucks coming into town and everything and what route. But we started weighing the economic impact that it has in some of these smaller communities like Waseca or St. Peter and some of these towns, Montgomery, that have these plants. But I do think in the long run, down the road, we need to take a look at a policy because I believe, you know, Minnesota being the number one producing sweet corn state in the nation, I believe they should be included. We should do this. But long term, Mr. Chairman, I think we need to look down the road to help the local authorities. And maybe it's such that they have routes that they would rather have these trucks move on that could handle them. But I think that's something that's going to take some time to try to develop that kind of policy. But I would like to move Senate file. Or what was your intent, Mr. Chairman? Were you going to lay this over for your omnibus policy bill?
Right. Okay. We'll lay this bill over and include it in our omnibus policy bill. So, right. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And appreciate it. Senator Benson. Are you here? There you are. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
And members of the committee. Today I have Senate File 1283 relating to Capitol Security. It is in front of you because of state patrol provisions in the bill. There are two significant parts to the bill. One specifically allows the state patrol to expand its coverage for a credible threat. Right now their responsibility is the governor, and to provide security for others who might have a credible threat, they need legislative support. So that's in the bill. The larger part of the bill is the establishment of a committee on capital security, and I'd like to address that in more detail. I was privileged to serve on an ad hoc committee for Capitol Complex Security, and what we sought was an overall solution to security within the Capitol Complex. We wanted to avoid overreacting to situations like those of Congresswoman Gifford and other things that you would hear in the news. And while much work had been done on security in the past, and we have a pretty solid base for security, we felt it was time for some leadership and accountability to be taken for Capitol Security. The governor has done his part, appointed the Director of Public Safety to lead the team, and designated the Lieutenant Governor to lead the administrative committee that you see laid out in the bill before you. As we walk through the members of the committee, a lot of you are saying, why on earth do we need another committee and why do we need this many people? Very briefly, two senators, majority and minority, from the House and the Senate will provide us with continuity over time. We don't want this to be a flash in the pan committee. We want this to take a long view, as we have many security issues that we'll have to deal with over time. The sergeant in arms of both the House and the Senate are responsible for the operations of the House and the Senate. And the Chief Justice, as that third branch of government, needs to be respectfully involved in security decisions, as it will impact operations at the Supreme Court. The Commissioner of Public Safety, obviously, as the governor's appointed leader of Capitol Complex Security. The Department of Administration is responsible for keeping the buildings running and holding things together, including security cameras and operations along those lines. And the CAP Board maintains the integrity, the historical integrity of this facility and the areas around and within the Capitol Complex. At this time, I would like to offer an amendment. The Minnesota Historical Society, the people who do the tours in this building, have asked to be included in this committee, and I've spoken with others, and they're amenable to it. And I don't believe we've had council prepare an amendment. Okay. many things floating around today. I apologize. So if I could offer that amendment orally or have someone on the committee offer as item number 10 on page 3.
Senator Perry moves Senate File 1283.
And, we're doing an amendment. Oral amendment.
We don't have to move the bill.
I'll move the Benson
Senator
oral amendment.
Perry moves the Benson oral amendment.
If council can read it back.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment would be on 3.18, delete and, 3.20, before the period, insert, comma, and 10, one member of the Minnesota Historical Society.
Or a representative from the Minnesota Historical Society.
That would right. Work. It would be a member of the committee. So one... one representative of the capital of the Minnesota Historical Society. And did you want to provide who would select that representative?
Senator Benson.
I'm not sure. I'm going to ask some advice from the Historical Society. They have offered language.
Council has also said that this is something, this bill will be referred to state government. This is something that we can clarify there, too, if you're not prepared to make that adjustment to it at this
correct.
Time.
Maybe you know, Mr. Chair, I think that might not be a bad idea.
Thank you.
I'll withdraw my oral amendment because I rightfully so, I would think that would be the appropriate spot to do that.
We can go ahead and do it there. Senator
Mr.
Benson,
Chair,
if you're okay
Senator
with that.
Perry, I appreciate the wise counsel. Let's make this as clean and efficient as we can. The remainder of the bill speaks to the responsibilities of the committee. We want them to meet regularly but not be burdensome. They will be bringing back necessary legislative action to move capital security forward. That's the intent and summary of the bill, and I would ask for support and happy to take questions.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Probably also a matter for the next committee stop, but last night we did have a really good and extensive conversation about a proposal that Senator Nelson brought forward to establish a commission that's going to oversee the restoration of the Capitol, the historic renovation of the Capitol, and they touch on matters of security in that renovation. And we probably need to make sure that this committee has a formal touch to that committee.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, that would be the responsibility of the CAP board. That's where you would find that tangential relationship because no restoration could be done outside the authority of the CAP board. And so I think we might have solved that by line number, let me find it.
319. Senator Dibble, is that?
I think the CAP board actually, we found out, has less authority last night than we thought. And they have kind of review and sign-off authority, but this commission is going to be responsible for soliciting and approving the plans in conjunction with and as a function of the Department of Administration. So we may need to bolster that connection and relationship.
And
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, and respectfully, Senator Dibble, we do have a representative from the Department of Administration as well. I hope eventually we're getting to enough.
We can have this discussion in the next.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could just ask council, specifically, this bill is in front of transportation for what?
Ms. Berzovsky?
Mr. Chair and Senator Perry, this committee has jurisdiction over state patrol. So it's 299D. In the statutes and the state patrol involvement.
That's correct, Senator Perry.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just make one comment, and you probably hear it again in state gov where this is going to go. Though I totally dislike forming new committees and commissions, in my mind, we have a state patrol chief. We just told the state patrol, do it right, keep the building safe. I'm sure with their expertise and everything, working with people like the CAP board and this commission, they could make that happen. But we need to move this, and I'm okay with that. But I think when you get so many people involved, it bogs down the system and takes longer and longer to accomplish what we have. Competent people protecting other areas that could do just the same. But
Senator Benson.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Perry, I agree. There are too many people, but we wanted it to be bipartisan, and we wanted everybody who could be touched to have a voice in the process. The State Patrol does an excellent job with this building, as do the Sergeants at Arms. But what we found as we looked over, again, probably too many meetings, was that security right now is kind of disparate, and if we bring it under one point of leadership and one person of accountability, we believe things will move forward and be a more efficient, more cohesive. And we're not just talking building security. We're talking the complex all the way over to the Historical Society. And so it's bigger than just the building. and as reticent as I am to form a new commission or committee, so far we're not moving security forward as fast as we need to.
Any other comments? Senator Purr?
Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 1283 be passed and recommended to pass at, no, we didn't amendment, so recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State Government, Innovation, and Veterans.
Senator Perry has moved that Senate File 1283 be recommended to pass and re-referred to State Government, Innovation, and Veterans. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Thank you, Senator Benson. Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair and members, I have Senate File 1106 before you. And I, Mr. Chair, I'm not exactly sure I have an author's amendment, but then I have a few oral tweaks. Can I do that all at once, or I've got the A11.
Do we have the A11 amendment? Get that passed out, Senator Gazelka, and if you would like to speak to the bill and the amendment.
Senate File 1106, Mr. Chair and members, this is before you today, members of the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota. Thanks. And the Amateur Rider Motorcycle Association, District 23, brought the provision of this bill to my attention. Motorized recreational vehicles or use is important in my district and I think around the state. This bill will ensure riding opportunities remain open. Parents can properly teach their children to ride. It reduces the burden to local governments. It allows owners of off-highway motorcycles the opportunity to equip their motorcycles with proper road safety equipment and a little more. But that's the general bill. I've got Jonathan Bowen of Media Government Affairs that will help testify after we adopt the amendment.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bowen, but before that, we don't have that amendment available right at the moment. But we'll go ahead and have Mr. Bowen offer his testimony on the bill. Welcome to the committee, if you could identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, I can address the sections of the bill that I'd prefer to delete. We can do that as part of the oral amendment if we could.
Okay, is this the oral amendment portion of,
yes,
of that? Okay, then we're still looking then for the A11 amendment, I understand?
Yeah.
Okay, this is beyond that. Very good. You would,
so on line 1.12, the far right after the word lands, delete the remaining part of that line, and then 1.13, delete all the way through number two parentheses. So the sentence starting on 1.11 would read, except for designated forest roads, a person must not operate an off-highway vehicle on state forest lands during the firearm deer hunting season, etc. And then, Mr. Chair, the other part of this would be to delete sections 2, 7, and 8.
Senator Gazelka moves to amend verbally amend Senate File 1106 to delete sections 2, 7, and 8. Is that correct? And also on line 1.12 to strike everything, including parentheses and 1 on line 1.12, and on line 1.13, everything up to, but not including, and including parentheses number 2. Does everybody understand the amendment?
Mr. Chair, on line 1.12, the semi or the colon after lands as well.
The colon after lands. Okay. Senator Stephen?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I just wanted to clarify that you're just deleting the new language, the proposed new language in section 7-8, correct?
That's correct. Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen, yes.
Berzovsky, would you like to go through that whole verbal amendment one more time, oral amendment?
Mr. Chair, the amendment would be to, on 1.12, strike colon and 1 in parentheses. On 1.13, strike everything through the 2 parentheses.
I got to listen to this.
Then delete sections 2, 7, and 8.
Senator Perry.
So when we're looking at 1.2, it would read then beginning in 1.11, except for designated during the firearms deer hunting season in areas?
No.
I missed something there.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Berzovsky.
Senator Perry, perhaps I read it wrong. It would read, except for designated forest roads, a person must not operate an off-highway vehicle on state forest lands during the firearms deer hunting season.
Okay. All right. That's what I did. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator DeCrane.
I'd just like a clarification, too, and I think Senator Sieben may have asked this, but I just want to clarify. So all of Section 2 is deleted. That looks like it was all new language. In Section 7, are we deleting all of Section 7 or just the underlined portion?
Mr. Chair, we're just removing Section 7 from this bill altogether. I think Mr. Bowen would probably want to make a comment. If that helps people understand it, that'd be good.
And then, Mr. Chair, one more thing.
Senator DeCrete.
Could we address Section 8, too? So all of Section 8 is deleted.
Bowen?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Jonathan Bowen. I'm here today representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota and the Amateur Riders Motorcycle Association, District 23. We had met with the Highway Patrol and the DVS, Division of Vehicle Services, right before this hearing, and they brought forward some concerns about these sections, so we're simply removing them from the bill, or asking they be removed from the bill so that we have time to work with those two departments to ensure that the language that will move forward in the process is the best that it can be. So what would happen now, these sections just be deleted from the bill. It would not repeal any of the current language. It just deletes the sections entirely.
Any other questions? Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I remember being confused about that issue at one time, too. When you delete a section of a bill, yeah, you're not repealing the existing language in statute, just repealing the changes to the statute that you were proposing in your bill.
Any other questions on the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now, do we have the A11 amendment?
Mr. Chair, what we could do is address the rest of the bill, and either I or somebody else can offer that as an amendment.
Certainly.
When it comes.
Right. If you would go, do you have any more testimony on the bill? Okay. Mr. Bowen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will try to stick to the sections that are pertinent to your committee, and if there are questions about any of the other sections, I'll be happy to answer them. But we'll start on Section 9, page 4, line 32. This section is deleting the the word four-wheel and the an old definition of ATV and replacing that definition with the current statutory citation. That definition is from 2006 and prior, I believe, so the definition has changed significantly since then. We are simply deleting that old language and replacing it with the statutory citation so it remains current. Section 10, what this will do is reduce the burden on local governments. Instead of having to renew an ordinance that allows ATVs on their roadways every year, they now will only have to do it every 3 years. So it reduces the amount of time needed on this issue for local governments. And then Section 11 is a time of operation clause that states that right now ATVs that are on the roadways are not allowed to ride at nighttime or during the dark. And what this is doing is changing it so if the ATV is equipped with the original equipment, which includes headlights, taillights, and a rear-facing brake light, that they would be allowed on the roads during the nighttime, except during emergency conditions as provided in the ordinance. So it gives the local governments a little bit of flexibility to as they write their ordinance, depending on what suits their particular needs.
Mr. Chair, I can just make a comment, too. In the environment, it passed unanimously out of that committee.
And also, real quick, Mr. Chair, sections 12, 13, 14, and 15 all just delete the word four-wheel when it is describing an all-terrain vehicle. Some all-terrain vehicles have three wheels. Some have six wheels. As long as they meet the statutory definition, they doesn't necessarily need to have four wheels, so we're removing the four wheel from all of the different statutes, the current statutes.
Additional questions? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Section 1, you're deleting seasons for the off-highway vehicles, and maybe you mentioned it, but could you just explain again what the reason for that is?
Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen, could you repeat that? I was not listening.
What I was just curious about what the purpose of what you're doing in Section 1 is what's the rationale for getting rid of the seasons for off-highway use on forest lands?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen, I'm going to let Mr. Bowen talk about that.
Mr. Bowen?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen, thank you for the question. In the 2007 session, we had worked with the Senate and the House to pass this language that allowed the department to work with the user groups to create a season. And the problem arose, and the reason the language is in there that year, there was some riding in the Nemadgee State Forest during rifle deer hunting season. And we found out later they are actually residents of Wisconsin that were riding in the forest. It created some problems with the hunters up there. So what we did is we sat down, the user groups and all other parties that were interested in this, including the deer hunters, sat down with DNR and created the season that's then listed as paragraph number 2, which restricts us from riding during rifle deer hunting season, doing any recreational riding during deer hunting season. So what we're doing is simply deleting the language that has now become redundant that allows the commissioner to establish a season. The agreed upon a season is then was passed last year in a statute. Yeah, DNR is not opposed.
Mr. Chair.
Senator DeCry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question looking for a clarification on what designated roadways mean. It's in Section 11, Subsection 3. It says motorized golf carts and all-terrain vehicles may only be operated on designated roadways from sunrise to sunset. I'm trying to just understand what designated roadways are.
Mr. Bowen?
In the local ordinances, most times the counties or the cities specify what roadways you can use these machines on, so that would then become a designated roadway.
Senator Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, in other words, what this is doing is if somebody goes out and you're seeing a lot of the golf carts being equipped now with taillights and turn signals and that, if it allows them to actually operate on a roadway as any other vehicle, or if you take, or if I take one of my 18 different motocross bikes and I want to put lights on them and register them, I would be able to operate these on a regular roadway as well. That's how I read that section that Senator DeKreif was looking at, because it says operate on designated roadways unless equipped with original equipment, headlights, taillights, and rear-facing brake lights. So this would allow then, for which, you know, we hear in many different communities, the complaint is that you can't run to the grocery store if you live three blocks away in your golf cart. But if you adhere to this, you would be able to do that now.
If, Mr. Chair, Senator Perry, if local ordinance allows.
So this doesn't supersede the local ordinance then?
No.
Mr. Chair, I,
Senator DeKreif,
I'd like a little further clarification. I have some interest in this because for a couple of different reasons. Number one, I own a campground, and there's a ton of golf carts out there. And number two, I last year bought something called a low-speed vehicle, which is a whole other thing, which has a legal license plate on it with a VIN number. What I'm wondering about this language is, do you need local permission, or does this give you local permission unless your local government takes it away? Unless they designate it, does this give you permission unless it's specifically taken away?
Mr. Chair, as I understand the statute currently, the local ordinance has to allow it. That's the way it is currently. So they would have to actually pass an ordinance allowing for these roadways to be used.
Mr. Chair, and I think, again, I go back to when I was on the council in Waseca. Our issue is that the state didn't allow it. So we created ordinances that made sure. And I'm thinking, if this is reading the way it is, and with, again, I go back to with the economy and everything, we have a lot of golf cart owners and that if they are equipped properly, as I read it here, then the state is saying, yes, they can operate it on the roadway, which would in fact let cities take a look at this and probably rescind some of those ordinances that they have developed in certain areas to allow for these vehicles to be on the roadway. I'm seeing some down-the-road issues here, Senator Gazelka, that I know you are going to be, or this bill is going to create with local ordinances and cities.
Mr. Senator Chairman, my name is Ray Bowen. Again, I represent the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota as well as ARMCA. It's not our intent to change the present local control statute. It's only our intent to I think, basically relieve their burdens. Right now, they have to issue these permits every year. And we are in a campground ourselves, and the city of Waterville that we're in actually does issue permits. So, but instead of doing it every year, they do it every 3 years. And we don't have any problem with that other than just trying to relieve the burden. And we do not, you know, it's not our intent to allow these on, you know, high-speed roadways, that's for sure. And I think it only pertains to cities. And, again, the cities, I think the city of Red Wing not too long ago went through this where they had issues with the golf carts and with ATVs, and I don't know exactly how it ended up, but every community should be, we think should be able to kind of decide that on their own.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don't get me wrong. I think this is fabulous. I think it's a great idea, but I'm just bringing up some from past. I think it's great. I think you will have a huge amount of citizens, and maybe Senator Howe is going to mention this too, but I think you're going to have a huge amount of citizens that are going to be able to go back now to the local city councils and say, hey, if you don't want us all over the city, designate a road, because now we're legal, and help us designate a road so that we can leave our condos and go to Hy-Vee or the grocery store or something and get back without, you know, driving the great big old car, we can take our golf cart, which if you look at some of them, they even have heaters in them, so they almost drive them year-round. But I think it's a great thing.
Mr. Bowen?
Senator Perry, if you look at Section 9, Subdivision 1, that is the current language that forces the or makes it so that the local ordinance needs to be passed before these are allowed in the roadways. So that is the current system, and our group in particular has been working with cities and counties all over the state to get different roads designated. I believe as of last year we had six counties that had designated roadways for them to be used, and we continue to see that expanding as gas gets more expensive and right. machines become safer to use.
Senator Hall?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Perry, someday you can aspire to be a mayor.
Thank you.
So don't end yet. As the testifier mentioned, we did discuss this down in Red Wing. My concern is that, you know, in Red Wing we created an actual license that you need to create, and there was some concern that we were going to be one of the few cities that actually did go through this process. We did exempt the downtown area, so there's only certain areas that you can drive in. When you get down to a congested area, you can't drive in that. And, of course, across the state highway route, you can only go perpendicular to it. You can only cross the roadway. So, you know, my concern is that we're going to have all these individual cities with different licenses. Like, one of the concerns that one of the council members had is that since we allow it now, are we going to have a bunch of people come into Red Wing to drive on our streets? And I didn't think that was going to happen, and it's really not the case. But if you come from outside the city, you need to go to the city to get a permit to drive in there. And I would think that we'd have some sort of a framework so these vehicles are going to continue to proliferate and we're going to have more of them, that there should be some kind of overall guiding structure that you don't have to get a license in every single jurisdiction or every municipality because, quite frankly, you could end up with a lot of stickers on your vehicle. So I think there should be something in there that guides the city and has that requirement.
Mr. Bowen?
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, this is something that our organization has been working on for at least the last 5 years, trying to figure out a way to create that framework. And we'd be happy to work with you into the future and ensure that we pass the best possible legislation that we can to make sure that everyone rides safely and that local governments continue to feel like they have a role in this. And that it's a discussion. We have an on-road committee within the organization that works on this throughout the year, and we'd be happy to include you in any of those discussions and keep you updated on how that goes. But as of right now, we just feel that we're not ready to come out with that kind of proposal, so we've tried to make it just a little bit easier for the local governments under the current structure.
Thank you.
Senator Senja.
Sure. I sometimes wonder if I'm understanding this, but one of the concerns, if I have a concern that, and it may not be valid, but whether or not local government still owns this issue. And I'm just looking at the language here and sort of wondering whether or not if on line 520, just ahead of motorized golf carts, if some language along the lines of unless precluded by local ordinance, motorized golf carts, et cetera, et cetera. I just think this is still a local issue. We had it seems like we're all in city councils, and I believe my city has a local ordinance that precludes golf carts on local streets unless permitted, and that's not often done. But I don't know if the witness would. Is it just implied in this language? Maybe I'd ask Senate Counsel that the local jurisdiction still still owns this issue.
Ms.
Berzovsky. Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum, the section 169.045 has a number of subdivisions, and the section itself deals with special vehicle use on roadway. The first statement in that section is the governing body of any local jurisdiction may by ordinance authorize the operation of. And the subdivision that you're looking at is a part of that section. So okay. I think that there is language that controls that makes sure that it is up to the locals to authorize.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm satisfied now.
Other questions? See, now we have the A11 amendment. Senator Gazelka moves the A11 amendment. Senator Gazelka to that amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to let Mr. Bowen describe it because I don't have it in front of me.
Mr. Bowen?
Mr. Chair, if you look at the bill, Section 4, Section 3 and Section 4 deal with new definitions of all-terrain vehicle. These new definitions were negotiated with the user groups, with DNR enforcement, and the manufacturers. And these agreements this language is set up so that the definition doesn't need to be changed continuously. It's been changed 3 of the last 4 years, and we're trying to create some stability to the definition. And under this new definition, there is one machine that is a side-by-side. It has two seats and a steering wheel that meets the Class 1 definition. And currently under law, Class 1s are allowed to ride in the road ditch, and Class 2s are not. Class 2s are typically the side-by-side machines. So this just states that any side-by-side machine is not allowed to ride in the road ditch, even if it's classified as a Class 1. So there's no confusion there with the user groups, and also then no confusion with law enforcement. This has been worked on with DNR and also the manufacturers, and everyone is okay with the language.
I did have a little concern that this seemed like it was a pretty broad or piece of additional information that was going into this bill without having gone through the Natural Resources Committee. So I appreciate the clarification. Is MnDOT here, and could they come up and speak to this? Maybe give us their perspective, Mr. Rudin?
Mr. Chair, Eric Rudin, MnDOT Government Affairs, and we do have a concern with the larger, what would be a Class 2 ATV or the side-by-side operating the road ditches, but for the Class 1 or smaller ATVs, we have an ability under existing law to prohibit those ATVs if they're causing, if they're causing excessive damage in a particular location. So it sounds like this compromise that's been worked out follows the existing standard, which is that the smaller vehicles can be operated in the ditch, but the larger side-by-sides cannot be.
Yeah. I wonder if this is a spot. Good. Any other questions on the A110376 amendment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator DeCray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I live in southern Minnesota. And I have something of an issue with four-wheelers that you straddle riding in the road ditches probably in the month of March. What they do in our area is they can really tear up the road ditches terribly. And I've talked with the DNR about it some, and they say legally if they're doing damage, they may try to threaten that they have to repair it. But I've always wondered if we should have something in statute that says when the same date, which changes in different areas of the state, if the same date that fish houses come off the lakes, four-wheelers would have to stay out of the road ditches through the nesting season. Now I think the nesting season starts, it might be the 1st of April or something. I don't recall when they have to stop going in the road ditches. But in our area, Highway 60, there's an area that most springs it is tore up terribly, and I object to that damage being done to our state road ditches. But I'm wondering if they might rather during that period of time be allowed to ride on the shoulder of the road or something, in a safe manner, if there's such a thing. Could you respond to that some and maybe give me an idea? Is this actually the place in statute that that might be placed if I wanted to make an amendment to that effect?
Mr. Rudin?
Mr. Chair and Senator DeKreif, yes, I think this would be the place in statute where that type of amendment would be appropriate. I think from MnDOT's perspective, we would certainly agree that they probably cause more damage at certain times of the year. But I don't think we necessarily want them operating up on the roadway because they're obviously not equipped to handle being in a crash with a motor vehicle. So from that perspective, it's safer to have them in the ditch, but the issue of damage that you talk about is something that we do have extensive experience with, and some locations are more problematic than others. I think from MnDOT's perspective, we would certainly be open to something like what you just described, but I think we would have to talk to the other groups about that. I think they might have some concerns about that approach.
Mr. Chair.
Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Rodine, I appreciate that. And I actually would be open to discussing that. I don't think I'm prepared to make that amendment today, but I would be interested in working with the groups to discuss that and maybe some potential language along that area because, like I said, there's some extensive damage done to some road ditches in my area, predominantly in the month of March.
See if you catch a muskie.
Mr. Bowen?
Mr. Chair, Senator DeKreif, our organization, again, has been discussing this issue for the last year or two and trying to figure out a way to alleviate some of those problems because we also do not want any kind of damage caused by our use. And southern Minnesota is a hard area to work in because of the lack of riding opportunities in general. But we have been working with DNR over the last year or two to create some kind of fix to this problem, and we'd be happy to work with you in the future and find a way to fix it.
Okay, thank you.
Right. We are on the A110376 amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Gazelka.
Chair, this is Senate File 1106 as amended is a good bill. It's compromised from every area. I don't think we've had anybody that in the end was disagreeable with the final bill, and so I move that we pass this, but I'm not sure what the next stop is.
Senator Gazelka, I think we will hold it over for inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair, may I just ask one
final? Senator Sanjo.
On the front page of the initial bill, which I think is still part of the bill, is that not right?
Yep.
Where it talks about these restrictions, and it seems, let's see, it talks about areas of the state where deer may be taken by rifle as sort of the defining, as I understand it, the defining location about where these restrictions apply. I don't think, for instance, in southern Minnesota, we don't shoot rifles down there, right? I don't believe.
No.
Some don't even own guns.
So does. So if that is the case, then does the whole rest of the bill not apply to southern Minnesota?
Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's just a
And Mr. Chair, I don't know how the bill kind of fits together. That's the basis of my question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sanjum, good question.
Mr. Chairman, Ron Potter with the Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, Senator, your zone is not included in that exemption or that restriction because the trails are already closed during your firearm season down there, so this doesn't affect that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, well, DNR is still at the table.
Sure. Senator Dibble.
So thanks, and I kind of missed it when this issue was explained earlier. My concern is you know, ATVs riding through sensitive areas when the ground is soft. Does this bill open up that potential, or is that not affected by what we're seeing here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, no, this would not affect that. I mean, those restrictions that are in place will still remain in place.
Okay.
In the ag zone, the restriction from April 1 to August 1 will still be in effect.
Okay.
That has not been impacted. We still have the right to close trails if conditions warrant. If we get a major rainstorm or something, we still have the ability to close trails to protect the resource.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator DeKreif, did you have a comment yet?
No, I don't think so. Thank you.
Senator Cruz. Okay. Any further discussion? All right. Senator Gazelka, we will hold this bill over for inclusion in our omnibus policy bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next up is Senator Wolf. Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to move Senate file. Can't see it in front of me. Thank you.
1136.
I have Dorian Grilly here to explain the bill. This has to do with electric assisted bicycles.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank
we
you.
Welcome your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dorian Grilly. I'm the executive director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. I want to thank Senator Wolf and Senator Rest and the other authors for bringing this forward. The Bicycle Alliance supports Senate File 1136 simply because it's the right thing to do. Technology has changed since the current law was written, and electric-assisted bicycles are just that. Bicycles with a modest electric assist that can go no more than 20 miles an hour on flat ground. They're not mopeds, which are motorized bicycles, which can go 30 miles an hour, and they're certainly not motorcycles. They are most popular with those who are somewhat less able, but still have a desire to explore Minnesota's networks of trails, bike routes, and bike-friendly communities on two wheels. Many are purchased by older individuals that need a little help to keep up with a riding partner. Recognizing this, many bike shops have offered electric-assisted bicycles for sale. Even Best Buy has offered them to test markets in other states. Most of the ones being built and sold are powered by 250 to 350-watt motors, which is a quarter to a third of a horsepower, not the 750 to 1,000. Which is currently allowed by law. The Minneapolis Electric Bicycle Company and Trek Bicycles of Wisconsin both have several electric-assisted bikes as an option that you can purchase in bike shops here in the Twin Cities and throughout Minnesota. As I said, they're capable of going no more than 20 miles an hour, which is a speed that an able-bodied cyclist without a motor can usually exceed. But a survey done by the Three Rivers Park District show that electric-assisted bicycles are most often ridden 10 to 15 miles an hour, so they really aren't going to be a conflict with other trail users any more than a bicycle, a non-motorized bicycle is. This bill would make Minnesota law consistent with federal law and some other states, including Iowa and Illinois. Under federal law, electric-assisted bicycles are not considered motorized vehicles as they are currently in Minnesota and are required to be permitted on trails receiving federal funding unless the state or local entity has passed a law otherwise. So there's a gray area of, you know, we certainly have a lot of federal money in many of our trails throughout Minnesota, so this would help clarify that gray area. So I think it's the Bicycle Alliance thinks it's the right thing for Minnesota to allow electric-assisted bicycles to be ridden legally on trails where bicycles are permitted unless they are specifically prohibited for a reason. It's also right to allow them to be ridden on roads and governed by bicycle laws, not the motorized bicycle laws. I personally think they're wonderfully efficient and they're fun to ride, but I don't plan to buy one unless I'm become a little less able. So,
Senator Wolf, has this been a problem? Has anybody been ticketed, or has there been a problem with law enforcement on these? Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps Senator Wolf could put on her author's amendment first, and then I have some comments to make about the bill.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to offer the A2 amendment.
As they're passing that out, if you'd like to describe the amendment.
Yes, what this amendment does, and I'll let Senator Rest take over. This brings all the parties interested, got together and put together this language, and this does put this so that the bill is in the exact same language as the House bill.
And Mr. Chairman, further, in meeting with DNR and the park districts and local governments and whatever, we wanted to reaffirm that and do so with this amendment that safety on bike trails is the first priority and of paramount importance. And so what the amendment does is to assert that there would be safety conditions under which the affected monitors and supervisors of bicycle trails could on occasion say that it's not safe to operate them. And so that's why the language is repeated over and over again for each section of the bill.
Any questions? Well, Senator Wolf, can a person who is rollerblading down a trail or simply walking or jogging identify this particular bicycle as having a motor, and will others that have motorized scooters or something else be able to point to it and say, well, that has a motor on it, why can't I run mine that has a motor on it also? Can you describe what the bicycle is, what it looks like?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dorian Grilly again. They actually do look a lot like a regular bicycle. Some of them look a little different, but the one produced by the Trek Corporation in Wisconsin simply has a large hub in the middle where the motor is placed and a small battery pack on a rack behind the seat. But the battery pack is maybe a foot long and 3 inches deep, so they're not terribly easily identifiable, but if you know what you're looking for, they don't make a lot of noise like a moped, a motorized bicycle with a gasoline motor does.
And Mr. Chairman, you pedal these. These are not they're not mopeds. You do pedal them.
My concern was just that, like I say, somebody would see one of these and say, hey, that's got a motor on it. The sign said no motorized vehicles or whatever it might be. How come he can ride? I can't ride. And might cause a little bit of controversy there. And you know how we are in this committee, Senator Rest. We don't like to have too much controversy.
Try to avoid controversy.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair?
Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rest, are you basically saying that my Harley-Davidson wouldn't qualify for this?
Senator Rest.
I wouldn't want to cause any controversy with you because I want you to vote for Senator Benson's Senator Wolf's bill, but you may not use your Harley on a bike trail, and you would be ticketed.
Okay.
With or without this.
Mr. Chair?
Senator DeCryf.
I could go ask one more thing. What about my electric golf cart? It's quiet.
Yeah.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Greif, you have to keep that on your golf course and wherever it was you just allowed it to roam in Red Wing.
Okay. Or wheels, not two.
And it has.
Senator Dibble first.
Oh, this is not to the A2. It's more a general statement about okay. The
knowledge. Why don't we go ahead and adopt the A2 amendment? Senator Wolf moves the A2 amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, you had asked previous to voting on that if this was an issue and had it become a problem, and I would like right. to respond to that now, and maybe people would understand why what this bill proposes to solve, as a matter of fact. Late last summer, two of my constituents contacted me, and I started working with them on this very issue, and as described by the person from the Bicycle Association, they had been, it's a couple, they were, had retired, and the wife, they had, and they're bicycling enthusiasts, and they had been bicycling over all kinds of trails all over the state. And then the wife developed some arthritis, and she was finding it more and more difficult to use a regular bicycle and to enjoy the bicycling with her husband. And so they did purchase an electric assist bicycle and then found out that it was against the law to ride them on the trails. They were informed, however, that no one was going to bother them, that they were going to be allowed, that it was not going to be a major issue. And although they appreciated the sensitivity and the sympathy, that they also were very uncomfortable with being scofflaws, with winking at the law, and instead came and worked with me and then later with Senator Wolf on saying, well, why not just change the law so that we can be law-abiding riders of our bicycles and continue a pastime that we have enjoyed for decades. And so working again with all the interested parties and with their support, and there is no opposition to the bill in the larger communities now and among the local governments, we are trying to make sure that people who have a disability, to the extent where enjoying their bicycle riding is no longer an option unless they have an electric assist bicycle and then they want to do it legally.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, Senator Olson, would this affect...
Wolf, I got her name wrong, too, but this is Senator...
Wolf, Senator Howell.
Benson
Olson. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of somebody else.
Whatever.
I'm sorry, Senator Wolf.
We have a massive name confusion going on here.
Absolutely.
Senator Howell.
I guess I'm still thinking about education. I had a question about on our trails. Do we allow scooters, like non-motorized scooters or skateboards or anything like that? They're prohibited from the trails right now.
Senator Wolf? Mr. Grill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, right now, anything with a motor is not permitted on most of the trails around Redwood.
Mr. Chair, let me clarify. When I talk about a razor, you know, I don't know if you've seen those razors where they got the, you know, they're not motorized, and a skateboard wouldn't be motorized. So I'm wondering, are they allowed on the bike trails now? Or are they allowed in the trails?
Mr. Grill.
I don't think there's anything that says they're not.
Right. Yeah.
They are allowed.
Non-motorized. Yeah.
They
skateboards
are
and scooters are
and,
allowed.
And I guess my question or my point is you're making accommodation here for an electric bicycle. They do make electric razors. They do make electric skateboards and things of that nature. I'm just wondering if there's flexibility in here for someone who wants a, you know, that wants to not pedal but just stand and ride, you know, similar, I guess, to a Segway or.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there are certain types of things that you can move to, things that you can use to move yourself along the ground that are protected by the ADA laws. And for example, as I understand it, you can use a Segway on on these trails because it is permitted by the American with Disabilities Act. And this is the standard that we're asking for here is no different from what really is part of the federal act, but we also have to bring it into Minnesota law so that the definition of bicycle, and we're not talking about any other kinds of appliances or I don't want to call them vehicles because that has a different connotation, but things that you've just mentioned, like scooters or non-motorized scooters, we're not talking about those in this particular bill. And I guess I would be reluctant to have Senator Wolf expand that beyond the purpose of assisting these people.
Senator Hall? Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. That's the clarification I was looking for because I was just wondering if you'd if the thought was that it should be flexible to anything that's currently allowed that would be electrically assisted that wouldn't go over the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit. And I can just see that there's going to be some maybe a tad bit of confusion on it, but
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify that there is a very specific definition of an electric-assisted bicycle. It means it has to have pedals that are operable, and so an electric scooter would not qualify under this bill. So there's a pretty clear definition already in the statute.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Sengel?
Well, first for the gag question of Senator Wolf, Senator Perry and I were talking about, you're probably not old enough, Senator Wolf, but we used to take clothespins and playing cards and put them on our fenders and let them hit off the spokes. So if we wanted a motorized effect, could we still do that under this bill?
Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sengem, if you need the little noise while you're bicycling, I think that would be permissible as long as it's not a motorized.
But then more seriously, I'm just kind of wondering where, and I should have asked this as we were talking about the amendment, but if I had one of these, for instance, and if I took it, I don't care, Duluth, Thief River, Moorhead, Owatonna, Waseca, if the local government would, for instance, not allow this to occur, would they be obligated through some signage or anything like that to be able to tell people about that, or would you just take your chances if you weren't familiar really with the city and its ordinances?
Senator Rust?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Sengem, I do think it would be up to the local government. We did discuss this when we were meeting with them about whether for the purposes of education they would on their, you know, at their own discretion want to put up signage that indicates what kind of activity is permitted on any given trail. Since the electric-assisted bicycles are going to be, by definition, a bicycle, they wouldn't have to have any specific additional signage. Sure. And once again, it's the case that that we got from talking with the various entities that they're not arresting people now who are 70 years old and riding using an assisted electric assisted bicycle, but the people who are doing that want to do so legally. Yeah. And that's what that's what the purpose of the bill is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Sundrum. Any other questions, Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to speak in favor of the bill and thank Senators Wolf and Rest for bringing it forward. I had a chance to try one of these out, a Kalkoff or Kalkoff electric assisted bicycle, and it's not quite my cup of tea. I'm not quite yet to that point in my life where I need the assist, but I can really understand how they will be useful and keep people active much later on in their years. They're pretty cool. And to Mr. Grilly's earlier point, you really can't distinguish them if you don't know what you're looking for. They just provide a little boost as you as you pedal, and they zip you along and can get up hills and go a little faster than you could otherwise. And so I understand, rumor has it, the demographer tells us the state is getting older. Everyone's getting older every day. So this is probably a good thing to do.
Okay. Senator Wolf, we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion, or for inclusion. It's actually in our delete all. Thank you for your testimony and the discussion. Thank you to your testifier,
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask a question, you would consider it as we have amended it here, correct, with the safety priorities?
We're going to take that all up as in the delete all, correct. We're going to take Senator Latz's bill here before we recess for a short period of time and move to room 318 to take care to do the Senator Rest's bill, and then we will do the toll road bill, Senator Rest, and then we will do the omnibus bill and try to wrap that all up here in the next little bit. Senator Latz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'd like to ask for your support for Senate File 1219. This would give the Commissioner of Transportation subpoena powers beyond the limited categories of subpoena powers that they already have now. Almost every commissioner has pretty broad subpoena power authority. They utilize it to investigate claims against the department, requests for payment of bills against the departments, and to enforce the terms and conditions of contracts. The Commissioner of Transportation apparently doesn't have the broad authority that they feel they need in order to hold their contractors accountable and make sure they're not paying claims that are inappropriate. So I have with me Betsy Parker, their chief counsel for MnDOT, to elaborate.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Parker. Good to see you again. I believe this is the first time this year.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker, for the record, from MnDOT. And I'll just make a brief explanation of why this is important to MnDOT. MnDOT enters into more than 2,000 contracts each year for construction and many different kinds of agreements, and must assure that the contract work is correctly carried out and that the state is billed correctly. And in the Minnesota Statute Section 174.02, which this bill would amend, the first duty of the commissioner is to prevent waste of state money and to preserve state funds. And so this bill addresses that need. In most cases, we have no problems with our contractors. Many contractors perform very well. But there are occasions when a contractor or consultant working for the department does not perform properly, or we receive invoices or information that we have questions about. And although we do have authority under state law and all of our contracts contain a requirement that make contractors subject to audit, on occasion a contractor or consultant will refuse to turn over records to the department. And in that case, we have no remedy other than to pursue litigation, which is considerably more expensive and complicated than simply issuing a subpoena would be. If the commissioner had authority in those cases to issue a subpoena, the subpoena could be issued requesting the records and books, and if the materials were not turned over, the department could request the district court to enforce the subpoena, which would simply result in the issuance of an order without actually filing a lawsuit against the contractor. Right now, the Commissioner of Transportation does have authority to issue subpoenas in very limited circumstances, and those involve regulatory authority exercised by the commissioner over the operations of airports and aeronautics, rail carriers, and motor carriers. And that authority has been in the statutes for decades. It has very rarely been used, and in fact, we expect that we would rarely use this authority, but it is the kind of tool that is necessary for an agency with oversight of contracts, because when you need it, that's when you have to have it. And if you don't have it, then you have to pursue some other much more complicated remedy. So it would be probably just a tool in the toolbox for making sure that we carry out our mission to administer all of our contracts in compliance with law.
Thank you, Ms. Parker. Senator Latz, is it? This seems like very broad subpoena authority. In your research, have you seen whether the other agencies, and I know a lot of other agencies have this subpoena power, is it pretty well laid out in this way, or do we direct that subpoena power to, say, contracts or financial matters within contracts and kind of limit it a little bit?
Mr. Chairman, you're asking me the same question that Senator Limmer asked me, and so I'm going to ask Ms. Parker to address that.
Ms. Parker.
Mr. Chairman, I looked at the subpoena language of some other agencies, particularly that of the Commissioner of Finance, now Commissioner of MMB, and that language is also very broad and allows that commissioner to subpoena and examine any parties to transactions with the state, which is basically the sort of authority that MnDOT is looking for. And in most other cases, agencies have authority covering all of the enforcement authority that they have. For example, the Commissioner of Revenue even has authority to delegate that power to agents, as does the Commissioner of Transportation for the Aeronautics Subpoena Authority. So it is rather broad, and when we were developing this legislation, I sat down and tried to make a list of all of the particular kinds of contracts and incidents that might trigger the need to use this, and we eventually decided not to go that way because it seemed more comprehensive to simply say in all of his official duties rather than to try to list what all of them were. There are areas where we enforce requirements based on other state and federal laws that we must do as part of our contract administration involving parties who may not be directly subject to our parties or to our contracts, but may be subcontractors or third parties, and so we would actually prefer something broader.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you for that. Senator DeCryf?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, I might be something of a more limited government person, but I question why in the past legislatures have limited the scope and the expanse of the ability of the Commissioner of Transportation to have the subpoena power, and why you bring in this bill forward, why you're asking for basically limitless subpoena power in this case. I guess I feel like this is blowing the doors off of just taking all the rules away and the limits away of what the subpoena power is here. And can you explain to me why former legislators may have decided that wasn't a very good idea and why they limited it?
Senator Latz?
Mr. Chairman, Senator DeCryf, I can't speak for former legislatures regarding subpoena power that's been in the statute for quite a number of years. I would suggest that Ms. Parker gave the explanation why they think they need the broader authority. I suppose we could create a longer list in statute that would have the effect of specifying the purposes for which the subpoena could be used, and if the committee is inclined to do that, I think that would be just fine. Clearly the intent here is to prevent fraud against the state, which is against the taxpayers of Minnesota, and the commissioner feels they don't have sufficient tools in the toolbox to do that effectively, or they're wasting a lot of resources trying to prevent that fraud that could be more easily and efficiently prevented utilizing the subpoena power. I'm certainly comfortable if the committee wishes to narrow that focus a bit whether it's contract compliance or claims for payment under contracts or something, language that would be more appropriate. That's fine with me.
Senator Latz, we do have some an amendment in the works. So. That sounds what we're looking for. Ms. Berzovsky?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment would be on 1.8 after the word two, in all matters relating to, insert administration of contracts to which the commissioner is a party, comma, relating to the commissioners. Mr. Chair, on 1.8, after the word two, insert administration of contracts to which the commissioner is a party, comma, relating to the commissioners. That's apostrophe S. That's the end.
Mr. Chair.
Senator DeCry?
I would move that oral amendment.
Senator Latz?
Mr. Chairman, we view that as a friendly amendment. We'd like to offer one additional suggestion because the commissioner does enforce prevailing wage and disadvantaged business instances in which the commissioner is not specifically the party to the contract. It's a third-party situation, but the commissioner has the enforcement authority. So if after the in the oral amendment after the word party, we could probably insert something like or prevailing wage and what's the full term for DBE? And the administration of the disadvantaged business enterprise program.
There goes the red flag.
Mr. Chair, I would like to limit it actually myself just to what the oral amendment was, the first oral amendment.
This bill has been requested by Judiciary, so it's going to go there too. Maybe my preference would be to limit it to the oral amendment as we originally heard, and with further discussion and maybe a little bit more comfort in Judiciary that those additions can be made. I want to know the total impact of that on the contractors as well as on the commissioner. So, Senator Dibble?
Thanks. Along those lines, and I'm not prepared to necessarily amend this amendment or offer my own amendment, but I did like the language that Ms. Parker cited that allows or authorizes the subpoena authority for the Commissioner of Finance. I think the language was financial transactions. And I think, I don't know if that gets to the DBE and the prevailing wage, but I think there are other activities that MnDOT is engaged that aren't necessarily subject to contract, but certainly affect the resources of the agency that the Commissioner should be able to have some subpoena authority and enforcement over. I don't necessarily want to deal with it today. I'll just suggest that as something else for Senator Latz to look at on his way to Judiciary.
Any further discussion on the DeGreif oral amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Sure.
To the bill? Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Ms. Chair. And just a question for Senator Latz or Ms. Parker. I was looking at the fiscal note, and I see it's blank, completely blank. And
we like those.
Very efficient in its narrative as well. but I was wondering, w- would there be potential savings? I mean, can we construe revenue here? I mean, it would seem to me that if we're able to get a handle on some instances of waste, fraud, and abuse, that we'd be able to recover some resources for the agency. Is it blank just because we don't have a way of guessing how much that might be?
Ms. Parker?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, I don't think I could make a guess about how much that would be. I think to the extent that the commissioner is able to prevent payment of expenses or costs that shouldn't be paid, that would be a saving to the state. This would probably be rarely used. We're on the lookout for that all the time. Several years ago, the legislature enacted the False Claims Act, which provides for, I believe, treble damages and assessment of other costs when parties are convicted of willfully and knowingly defrauding the state. So there is, that remedy does exist in another statute.
Senator Hall?
Is there any other discussion?
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 1219 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judicial and Public Safety.
As amended.
As amended.
Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Good luck in judiciary. Senator Lutz. We will now recess to the call of the chair in 15 minutes in room 318. And we'll take up a couple more.
318.
That's correct. Take up a couple more bills and do the omnibus bill.
Do they need to move stuff or should they take it?
Why?
Committee is in recess.